From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, back into the groove again, back into the locked and loaded groove here this beautiful Monday morning in Ireland. It is springtime. The sun is shining. You know, I can hear children playing in the background. I can hear birds tweeting in the background, not people tweeting, but birds tweeting. So it's all good here in the hood that I presently live in. Hopefully it is for you lovely people too. Some great comments in the live chat from the last hour following that call from Daz in Country Victoria. Real heartwarming call. Hope you're still listening in, Daz. And as I say, feel free to give me a shout at any time. That goes for everybody. Got an email address, rickmunn@tntradio.live. Feel free to message me. Leave me your thoughts and opinions on the shows. Just whatever. I'm there and I'll do my best to get back to you people if you reach out to me on the TNT email address. So plenty more still coming up in this hour. A lot more changes happening in TNT for the better over the next week or two, I would imagine, until everything settles down proper. But we've got some new presenters coming on this week, some new shows coming on this week, some fine tuning to do with the programming and the weekends as well. So please stay tuned. There's plenty more to play for here. And just also, sadly, I was due to go to the Comcast Festival over in England this week. I had to contact the guys and say, look, I'm not going to be able to do it. There's just simply too much going on here at the minute with TNT that I'm involved with, both on air and off air. And, you know, I was saying to Nick, who's running the event, you know, we thought this was going to be the charm, third time's the charm. When I was supposed to go last year, the airline cancelled my flight the day I was due to fly over, and then the airline went bust the very next day, which would have left me stranded over there. I wasn't able to get to the last one, and in this one, all the other shenanigans is happening in and around the station. And this is my priority, folks. I'd love to be able to go to the Comcast thing, but my priority is TNT. This is where my heart is, and this is where my priority is. But there's going to be a huge contingent of people from TNT going there. So please feel free to get your way down to Kegworth and check out their website, comcast.live. You'll get the full lineup and also use discount codes. There's plenty of them doing the rounds to get 20% off the tickets. So apologies to the Comcast people for that, but I need to take care of business here in my house. And my house is got TNT on the front door. So plenty more coming up this hour. Kate Fantenelle is going to be joining me at around about 20 past. Without any further ado, I'm going to inhale and welcome back our wonderful political editor, Basil Valentine, onto the airwaves. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back on TNT, today's news talk.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Basil, there's a policy group the Irish are setting up. You know, King Canute springs to mind here. So it's a promised policy group on sea levels, as expert warns threats to coastal homes are increasing in Ireland. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Sit round a table, drink some coffee, maybe some cappuccinos, set up a PowerPoint presentation, bullet point what they think they're going to do. You know, Canute tried this, didn't he? He set his throne in the sea and ordered it to go back again. And even if King Canute can't do it, what hope does an Irish policy group have on reducing coastal erosion around the Emerald Isle?
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Read that story about King Canute. About 1,200 or 1,300 years old now, and has become not just part of folklore, but a byline for sheer idiocy, really, for people trying to resist forces beyond their control. And it seems like history is indeed repeating itself. Of course, coastal erosion has always been an issue. For example, on the east coast of England, they do have to drop these huge boulders out at sea in order to soak up the power of the waves and stop it from breaking up the cliffs. Indeed, where I've been based on the south coast, it's a similar situation. Coastal defences are as old as the hills, if I may say so. But now, of course, we have the added urgency of the so-called climate crisis. And the Guardian only today are highlighting the fact that it's freezing in Finland, 15 degrees below, and extremely hot in the Sudan, 45 degrees Celsius, as somehow indicative of the fact that we all need to start panicking and getting out of our cars and switching to electric cars. But second-hand electric cars are virtually worthless, apparently, Rick. I saw a video posted over the weekend by someone who's got an electric Porsche. He can't give it away. The dealers don't want them back. As we know, with all battery-powered electrical goods, they deteriorate over time. Simple as that. You know, look at the price of a second-hand phone. You know, you pay £1,000 one year, 3 or 4 years later, you get 200 for it. That's just the way it is. So why would electric cars be any different? I've digressed from your point there slightly, but I think you would probably concur, Rick.
Yeah, we do. And also it's worth noting, Basil, just to put things into perspective, we're talking about the NHS waiting list. They're sitting, what's between 6 and 8 million people. You're looking at the country in complete disarray. Heck, local councils can't even fill in potholes in time or collect the bins on time. And if they can't do that, you know, the audacity of mankind thinking that somehow they're going to have an impact on the, you know, the weather systems of the planet by recycling their plastic bottles or, you know, using paper bags or cardboard straws in McDonald's is just beyond ludicrous. And also speaking about beyond ludicrous here, we have a story from Gaza that I think it's very important that we cover. This has just happened over the last 24 hours. So Israel-Gaza war, Netanyahu vows to defy allies on an invasion of Rafah. What do we know about this one in particular, Basil?
Well, you know, the so-called red line has been an attack on Rafah, where something like 1.5 million Palestinians are sheltering, having seen their homes, mosques, schools, universities, and infrastructure completely leveled to the north. And now Netanyahu doesn't think that 40,000 dead and 80,000 injured and mutilated is enough. And his bloodlust seems insatiable. Now, of course, Britain and America have not actually said that an invasion of Gaza is a red line, because that would mean they had to do something and they would rather do nothing. But the world is indeed united that any attack on the civilians of Rafah, because that's what it will amount to, for all this rhetoric about eliminating Hamas, a totally unrealistic objective. What is actually going to happen is that thousands more children, babies, women and men, for that matter, are going to be slaughtered and mutilated. That's what's going to happen. I mean, that is what's happening. That's what's been happening. I'd like to pivot very slightly to the comments made by the European Union's chief diplomat, Josep Borrell, who has condemned Netanyahu this morning for what he said is creating a man-made famine, and said that Gaza is no longer an open-air prison, which I don't think it ever was. It was an open-air concentration camp. The prison implies people have committed some kind of offence. The vast majority, I mean, you know, everybody in Gaza committed no offence whatsoever. But anyway, he said it's gone from being an open-air prison to an open-air graveyard. And indeed it is. There are bodies in the streets. There are bodies buried on the sidewalk. There are dogs eating corpses. All the reports are that it is the most hellish situation. Overnight, the Al-Shifa hospital was again bombed and set on fire. War crime after war crime by the homicidal maniac state of Israel. And yet, of course, Borrell is a representative of the European Union, the same European Union that projected the Israeli flag onto the headquarters building in Brussels on October the 8th. So would they do that again? Are they going to project the Palestinian flag? When are we going to see Ursula von der Leyen condemning an atrocity like using starvation as a weapon of war? It doesn't get any worse than that, Rick, in terms of atrocities.
Yeah, just for to put this into context in terms of numbers as well, Basil, the city of Rafa is currently crammed with some 1.5 million. That's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. Palestinians from other parts of Gaza seeking refuge. The German chancellor on a Middle East trip has restated his opposition to the plan. And you know what? Here we have again more words. Last week, if you can remember, we were talking about Leo Varadkar, who's currently over in America at the minute for St. Patrick's Day, along with a lot of sycophantic, money-grabbing, money-loving Irish politicians tickling Joe Biden's underbelly. And of course, last week, Varadkar famously said that he thought that despite everything that was going on in the Middle East at the minute, and despite the fact that Biden hasn't came out right and called for this and this, he said, you know what, his heart's in the right place. He thinks Joe Biden's heart's in the right place, and he just wants to reiterate, you know, find out exactly where he stands. It doesn't matter where people stand on this issue. It doesn't matter what people say about this issue. We need action. We need things to be done on the ground. You and I can talk until we're blue in the face about this. Absolutely. As politicians. But unless anything's actually done, Basil, these people are going to continue to die. Rhetoric just doesn't cut it anymore.
Well, unfortunately, you know, you're right. They are continuing to die. Chancellor Scholz has told Netanyahu, apparently he was in Jerusalem last night and is today at a meeting of European Union Foreign Ministers Summit in Brussels. Apparently he said, we cannot stand by and watch Palestinians starve. Well, Germany's been supplying weapons to Israel, and as far as I know, is continuing to do so. So that's exactly what Europeans are doing. They are standing by and watching them starving. We're not seeing anything like radical action enough. It's the worst situation of my lifetime. And the hypocrisy from European leaders is absolutely off the charts. But of course, whenever they make even statements like this, there's pushback from the Israelis. Israel Katz, the new Israeli foreign minister, has told Borrell, told he must stop attacking Israel. Israel allows extensive humanitarian into Gaza by land, air and sea for anyone willing to help. And of course, as always, Katz is accusing Hamas of disrupting aid convoys. This is the default fallback position. Everything is Hamas's fault. 40,000 dead, killed by American-made missiles fired out of Israeli jets. That's Hamas's fault. It's the most disgraceful victim-blaming scenario we've ever seen, Rick.
You know, listening to you talking about that, you know, I should be more horrified than I am. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's so much an everyday occurrence right now. Like we've talked about the shambolic state of the NHS, cover-ups, mass deaths, the midazolam business, mismanagement, rainbow bridges spent, hundreds of thousands of pounds misappropriated, PPE scandals. Sadly, I think, Basil, we're being engineered in such a position whereby we're being flooded with such atrocities and such heinous acts right across the world at the minute that while we condemn it, and we do, okay, and we want to see an end to it, which we do, it's almost par for the course now. This is almost another atrocity. It's not something that doesn't happen. You're just waiting for when it happens and what the details are.
I mean, it's continuous, and, you know, hundreds of people die every day, and it's caused barely a ripple on the news. The comedian Frankie Boyle coined the term ambient genocide. Mm-hmm. We have this, you know, sort of background ongoing genocide. A lot of people find it too horrific to focus on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are extremely traumatized by it, and quite understandably so. Phil Zimmerman described it, genocide is the new rock and roll, which is, sort of funny in the most macabre way.
Yeah, it is. And Phil's a great commentator and somebody who's certainly worth checking out as well. And obviously a colleague of ours is contributing to TNT Radio as well. That's Phil Zimmerman. Basil, massive thanks to you this morning for stepping into the breach and covering for Gemma. She'll be back, business as normal, with her tomorrow. And of course, Basil and I will spend the last 20 minutes of each first Locked and Loaded show in the mornings just chewing the fat together. So thanks to you, Basil, for all the extra input this morning. We'll talk again tomorrow. Please stay tuned. Kate Fantanil is incoming like a missile after this short ad break here on TNT. today's news talk.
TNT's Hervé Morich.
Being reported today, Canada's financial intelligence unit has shut some of its systems down as it manages what it calls a cyber instance. So again, we've been warned many times over about Cyber Polygon and something like this happening at a greater scale before or during 2025. That's what has been simulated. Whether it happens or not is an entirely different story, but more often than not, when they simulate, pandemics, war scenarios, they do come to pass.
Hervé Morich on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
If you're still wearing a cloth or surgical mask around in public, you're guilty of spreading COVID misinformation. It really is that simple. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT, today's News Talk. And today, guess what we're going to do? We're going to be talking about the news. We've done it with Basil. We did it with Jason Leo Santos. And now I'm very happy to do it again with the wonderful, the fantastic, the effervescent, the splendid, the magnificent Kate Fontanelle, a.k.a. Lady Liberty. Welcome back. How's that for an intro, eh? How's that?
Hi, Rick. You are too kind. You are far too kind. Always a pleasure to be on TNT Radio with you.
Yeah, and you know what? I have an old diary. You know, people like spreadsheets. This is my old 2023 diary, and this is my 2024 diary. No high-tech nonsense with me. And I thought, you know what? You were on around about this time last year, and I flicked through the diary, and there you were, 9th of March last year. And in fact, you've been coming on here on and off for the last 2 years. Can you believe it? Where has the time gone, Kate Fontanelle? Where has it gone?
What has happened in that time? It's been a very crazy ride. I ran for the Senate for Western Australia. Mm-hmm. I've been politically active. I've been fighting against the state, especially with gun laws in Western Australia. So much is happening in Australia, and I'm trying to keep up the fight as best I can for those who believe in liberty.
And you know what? You're doing a damn fine job of it, because you've still got a smile on your face despite everything life has been throwing yours and many other people's way as well. You put a post up on your Twitter feed. And by the way, you can follow Kate on the X or Twitter platform at Lady Liberty AUS. Please get on there and give her a follow. You were reminiscing, I suppose, yesterday about the last, 4 years, actually. Can you believe it? We're coming up to the fourth anniversary of these lockdowns. And somebody asked the question, in honor of the fourth anniversary of 15 days to slow the spread or flatten the curve, what are your ridiculous takeaways? And you said, and not being able to freely travel within my own country, which is Australia, or out of the state for 2.5 years, with the Western Australian government enforcing the strictest border checkpoints in the world, which they did under Mark McGowan, including 3 jabs minimum to re-enter the state again after you had potentially left it. But mining magnates, multimillionaires, media moguls, and the political elite could come and go as they pleased. Can you believe, reading back on that, that stuff actually happened, that it's not a little script or a little header for some twisted sci-fi dystopian Hollywood blockbuster? That was Western Australia, and that was your life, Kate Fontanelle, 3 to 4 years ago.
It was. At one point, Western Australia was the only state in the world with its border closed, apart from North Korea. Not someone you want to be comparing yourself to in a liberal democracy. It was just crazy what they did here. 2.5 years, too long. You can give them a bit of credit for the start. A lot of people closed their borders, but 2.5 years not being able to freely travel within your own country across the border to see my family in South Australia. And that other people have stories too, missing out on funerals, weddings, not being able to travel to see and be with their sick parents. It's absolutely devastating. There was a lack of compassion from this government, and there still is. They are still trampling all over the civil liberties of Western Australians. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show the little bit of power, a little bit of control, how dangerous it is when the governments and the state premiers have all the power over the people. And they weren't serving for the people for a lot of that time. I mean, if they're letting Twiggy Forrest, one of the mining millionaires I was referring to, media moguls like Kerry Packer, who owns the Western Australian newspaper that doxed 90,000 Western Australian shooters, I'm never going to forget that. That's the kind of political culture we have in our state. And that's something that I've been passionately talking to people about on the ground and trying to get them to see that the power structure isn't serving the people. And that's where we need to have the conversation about change.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not one for dwelling on the past. I'm not one for looking back. But in this case, you can't ignore this. And the reason why I don't want to ignore this is because the governments would like nothing more than us to let this fade into a distant memory, say, okay, Kate, well, I hear your points, but we learned lessons from that. We've taken away things for that. It doesn't take away from the fact that in your case that you didn't see your family for 2.5 years. And this 15 days to flatten the curve, that was the thing that we got in the UK. We were told 3 weeks. We were told 21 days. You guys were told 15 days, but the 21 days turned into, you know, 21 months, which, you know, we're still dealing for the fallout from that right now. So I think it's important that we don't let up on this topic, or we do revisit it periodically, because we can't let those governments wriggle off the hook.
And that's exactly why when I ran for the Senate that I promised I would have a royal commission into the handling of the pandemic to look at what we could do next time. Look at how they ran the show. And they had an inquiry in Western Australia where they gave themselves a 10 out of 10 gold star. I mean, they ignored all the submissions that strayed outside of their strict terms of reference. They didn't want to hear what they did wrong. They don't want to hear how they hurt thousands of people who didn't want to have 3 injections. That's right. 75% of the workforce were mandated to have 3 injections, not 2, in order to keep their jobs. Now, other examples of people having to make that choice, they didn't want to hear about how it affected us. So that just goes to show, if they're not listening to the people, and if they don't want to listen to the people, who are they serving?
You mentioned the word Royal Commission as well, an inquiry. The government effectively scored themselves 10 out of 10, which was very decent of themselves. Nobody else would have scored them 10 out of 10, I'm pretty sure about that. In Ireland, just to give you some kind of contrast here, they refuse to call it an inquiry because they said if we call it an inquiry, it insinuates that maybe we have done something wrong. Maybe we have done something that was wrong and criminal. So even in Ireland, Kate, they refused to call it a COVID inquiry. I think they called it a review because they had taken advice and said, well, if you call it an inquiry, depending on the results of that, you know, you could be called to task on it. So that shows you how low they've sank in Ireland as well, that they don't even want to give it the name that it is due, which is inquiry, or in your case, a royal commission, obviously. They're not going to do a royal commission in Ireland, but in the UK for sure, and in France and in Germany and right across the world, the best thing that these people can hope for is that this blows over. And when you look at Australia, if my memory is correct, you had McGowan in Western Australia, you had Anastasia Palaszczuk, you had Gladys Berejiklian, you had the infamous Dan Andrews, you had Michael Gunner, who was a lunatic, certified lunatic up in Northern Territories, I believe. I shouldn't know who these people are. I'm an Irishman, Kate. Why should I have to know about Michael Gunner and Mark McGowan? These people were so infamous. Their atrocities even made it over to the Emerald Isle. That's how bad it was.
And what they did to the people and the rhetoric they used to divide and scare us. I mean, some of the languaging about the virus will come into the desert and find you. That is a direct quote from Premier Mark McGowan. Now talk about trying to keep people calm in a time of uncertainty. They didn't care about that. They just wanted to push their own agenda. They wanted to push the jabs onto the people because they did those big deals with Big Pharma. They didn't even let us have the ability to come after them in the event that something did go wrong, which we are now seeing from all the data that there is legitimate concerns about those injections. But like you said, they don't want to be held accountable because they've quite frankly presided over some of the worst human rights abuses I've seen in my time. And that is saying quite a lot.
Indeed it is. And you know what? We've got to take a little pause right now for headline breaks. And if that wasn't traumatic enough for you walking down memory lane over the last 3 to 4 years, recalling back those horror years, let's pause. Okay, let's shake ourselves and let's look forward to maybe what lies ahead for Australia and see if you're slightly more optimistic about that. And I fear you're probably not, because some of the headlines that I'm reading at the minute, Australia's still on a pretty bad trajectory when it comes to the direction the globalists would like to take it. So we'll talk about a few issues, maybe immigration, also, of course, the shooting laws as well, something very close to your heart. We'll touch on that whenever we come back after this break, so don't go away. Stay tuned for more on TNT, today's news talk.
Deadline, TNT Radio News.
Big news.
Yeah!
Let's go! Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Vladimir Putin looks set to extend his nearly quarter-century rule over Russia after winning this year's presidential election by a landslide. After severing ties with France, the West African nation of Niger is now ending all military cooperation with the US, effective immediately. And Finland says all options must remain on the table when it comes to sending NATO troops to Ukraine.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Okay, you guys, without a shadow of a doubt, I remember whenever I started in TNT, I looked at Canada, I looked at Australia, and I looked at New Zealand, and you guys had by far and away the worst lockdown conditions, the most draconian conditions, I think, on the planet, without any shadow of a doubt. And actually, you in Western Australia, even more so, because it was the worst part of Australia as well. So we were dealing with other issues in Ireland while you were dealing with that. We were dealing with the borders being open and the country being swamped with illegal immigrants, putting stresses on infrastructures and one thing and another. And I know your family are from other places in the world, and I'm not against migration in any way, shape or form. My dad actually migrated to Australia in 1969, I think it was, and he stayed for 2 years and then he ended up coming back home again. But he was an Aussie resident in Victoria, in Melbourne, for at least 2 years. So I'm not against that. But at the minute, Kate, there's a little, not very much wriggle room or capacity to take in the amount of people that are coming in and maybe aren't being economically viable. So there's an article there that is seen this morning, and it goes like this: absolute betrayal of the people. Australian living standards are in terminal decline. An economist warns Australia is on track to obliterate last year's record immigration, and it's causing living standards to collapse. An economist warns. Now, obviously, that's very, dramatic headlines, and people might be saying, well, is that really happening? It is. And you could probably testify to that yourself, where you are at the minute. The squeeze is on everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you close down an economy for 2.5 years. We are now seeing the chickens come home to roost. Mm-hmm. All of these lockdowns, shutting down businesses, telling people to stay home, creating a laptop working culture instead of having people out in society. All of these things have now led to the situation we are in now in Australia, coupled with big government spending money that we don't have on government programs that aren't even working. An example of that, foreign aid. If I was in power, I would cut all foreign aid immediately and use that money to redirect to immigration programs and have people come to Australia instead of spending that money, giving it to governments overseas where it doesn't actually serve the people who requires it. So that's what I would do to address it. Immigration, we are a country of migrants. Like you said, my grandfather came from Italy and I have Irish background as well. Australia is a multicultural country. And I think most of us are proud of it. We love the differences and the different cultures that bring to our society. The problem is we have not got a functioning economy and a functioning society anymore because of the decisions of government over the last few years. And the decisions that they're making it now to try and help the situation, They're making it worse. Spending foreign aid overseas, that's not even touching the people on the ground where they need it. So a redirection of where this money is going is the first thing that I would look at. And I would funnel that into immigration programs that allow people who are in those war-torn countries, in Ukraine, in Gaza, to come here, not give that money to governments who use them to line the pockets of their mates or spend it on the military-industrial complex. So I know there's a lot to unpack there, Rick, but there's an economic storm on the horizon. Australians are struggling. Rent is going up. Inflation is through the roof. I had an Argentinian economist say to me that this is what Argentina was like 50 years ago. This is what started. This is deeply concerning to me because I love my country and I'm trying to run for office and I'm doing everything I can to talk to people about it, but it's just not there yet. Not enough people realize just how much control the state and governments have, and everything that you do on a daily basis is affected by government regulation. Australia is so overgoverned, so overregulated, and that's why we are in the position that we're in.
You know, you said something earlier on, you said, if I was in power, I would do this. Do you not mean when you're in power? Because I do feel, you know, I do have this feeling, I might be wrong about it, that someday you will be the Premier of Australia, the Prime Minister, the President, whatever you want to call it. You should be. I mean, you make a lot of good points. And, you know, when I listen to you talk and then I look at the reality of what's happening, it's hard to marry the two things up together. So basically, you know, they're boasting Australia's on track to obliterate last year's record immigration levels as record population growth sends living standards into terminal decline. So when you talk about numbers as well, Australia, the population I think is around about, what, 27, 28 million people. So it's not huge, but at the same time, it's like Ireland, our population is only 6 million, but it's proportion. You've got to look at proportionality here. And there's, you know, last year, Australia brought in a record 518,000 net overseas migrants in the last financial year. Looks set to obliterate that this year. Even if it's 2 million people, 3 million people over the course of a few years, that's 10% of the population in addition to the populations that there. And unemployment is bad. There's a lack of housing available, affordable housing, either to buy or to rent as well. You know, and stresses on infrastructure. So when you keep pouring people in, something's got to give, Kate, and something's got to break. And I can remember last week I covered a story from Brisbane, where there's a tenth city has effectively sprang up in the central business district in Brisbane, in Queensland, near the Gold Coast. The same thing's happening in Dublin, Ireland at the minute. There's 1,000 men sleeping on tents on the streets in the middle of Dublin outside the International Protection Office because there's nowhere to put them. There's no sanitation. They're defecating and urinating in the streets. They've got nothing to do. They're getting angry. They're getting hostile and they're getting agitated. Why even let them into the country in the first place if there's nowhere to put them? And the Irish government knew that, but still they brought them in anyway. Are the Aussies not guilty of that too? Surely they can see there's nowhere to put these people if they're living in tents in the CBD in Brisbane. Why keep bringing them in?
I don't think they care, quite frankly. We have a situation in Australia where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and homelessness is increasing, particularly among my demographic of women, because we've traditionally been higher in the homeless numbers, seeking shelter from domestic violence crisis, which is caused from those lockdowns and the strain and mental stress put on people during the last 2.5 years, because our lives were changed and controlled to an extent that people just aren't happy. There are a lot of people walking around and I talk to them and I see them in the street like you've just described, and I just have a yarn and say, how did you end up in this situation? And it takes one thing to happen in your life that you can end up in that situation. And the government isn't even helping these people. That's why we pay tax. When people argue with me about tax, I'm happy to contribute as long as the money is actually going to the services and to the people on the ground, not to the administration of a charity where a lot of the money is taken up. So the distribution of wealth, it's just not getting to the people who need it. And that is another example of government's programs creating more problems than actually fixing them.
Distribution with wealth and, you know, being a good steward of the funds that you have under your control, you would think are key requisites or prime requisites of a job in government, but that does not seem to be the way. We've got to take a little pause, Kate, for some ads, which I think we'll take now when we come back. Also want to look at, you know, the effect that the mandates had decimated the nursing industry or the nursing profession, teachers. I know your parents are teachers as well. Police, fire. A lot of people lost their jobs because they wouldn't take the jobs. Vaccine mandates, and especially in Ireland now, they're running recruitment campaigns. The Australians are running recruitment campaigns to try and get Irish policemen to come out and work in Australia when they laid off so many Aussies as well. And Ireland's currently experiencing a dearth of people joining the force, and they're actually trying to push existing officers to Australia to take the positions of Australians that didn't get the job, and then leave a bigger gap in the Irish police force in Garda Síochána. So yeah, you got to be wondering, where's the logic behind that, or what's the agenda behind that? So we'll dig into that in a little bit more detail when we come back after the short break here on TNT.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez, and normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
Hi, I'm Abel.
I often forget to mention that he's an amputee because Abel will try any activity he can.
My arm helps me with basically everything.
He doesn't see what he can't do, he sees what he can do.
Yeah, this is helping.
The War Amps has just given him the ability to do all the activities every kid can do.
When you donate to the War Amps, you help kids like me. Thank you!
Informative and engaging. Rick Mudd. Rick Mudd on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, let's talk about the police a little bit here. Not what they've done over the last few years or the way they policed the lockdowns and whatnot, but let's look at the actual police force. So I have some guests that I've had on here right from the start of TNT who lost their jobs because of vaccine mandates. One in particular, Stephen Kelly, who did 30-odd years with New South Wales Police. He lost his job because of that, kid. Now the mandates are easing them a little bit off. Australian police are advertising a recruitment drive in Dublin this week at the Temple Bar Hotel. Prospective applicants will need 3 years policing experience and can expect a starting salary of around about €60,000. That's our money before allowances and overtime. If you compare that to what they're currently earning, around about €30,000, they're going to need a bigger hotel. So what I'm saying is, you guys had mandates that got rid of a lot of good police officers. And now, instead of reinstating those guys back again if they wanted the job, they're going to Ireland and they're trying to poach Irish cops to come over with bumper salaries and actually drain the resources for the Irish police, which is currently suffering a recruitment dearth as well. What's going on? What's the strategy in that?
I think it's a deeper issue about the laws that police officers, who are law enforcement officers, perhaps they're not, it doesn't align with their conscience. So in Western Australia, under this government, the McGowan and now the Cook government, it is well and truly turned into a police state. And I've been very vocal in criticising this government for some of the laws that they put in. They do have pandemic laws on the books now that allow the police to enter your home without a warrant, to seize control of your vehicle, to come in and direct you to take a medical procedure. Yes, that is a law on the books in Western Australia at this very moment. So perhaps it's a bigger ideological question for people, because police officers are people. And a lot of police officers that I've known over the years went in to serve the people. They are not doing it anymore. They are the ones wearing the boot of the state, and they are being forced to put it on the civilians next. So I feel that there's a bit of a moral dilemma with people leaving, but also the way they were treated over the last 2.5 years. I mean, Victoria had mandates on their emergency services volunteers up until this year. They were still required to be injected. I mean, when your house is flooding due to torrential rain, do you really need to see someone's vaccine passport 2.5, 3 years later than the pandemic? So this is not how you treat service industry. We were talking off air before about nurses. Now, the nurses in Western Australia are enraged because the hospital systems that we closed the border for to protect are now crumbling. They are crumbling all around us. So they've actually mobilised and are going to contest the WA 2025 election as their own political party. These people, the public servants on the front line, are not happy with the government. And that speaks volumes. That speaks volumes about the nature of those jobs and how they are being run.
It's also incredibly hurtful and offensive if you're sacked for the reasons that we've just given. And then maybe they come back cap in hand and say, look, we've dropped the mandates now. We're short of staff. Kate, would you mind coming back into this profession that you give your life to, that we unceremoniously dumped you out of and effectively publicly shamed you because you wouldn't do what we said to do? A lot of people actually will not return back to those professions again, Kate, despite the fact that that's where their qualifications lay, despite the fact that that's what they did use to get their bread and butter. But just on a matter of principle, it's like, no, I'm not going back to that because you disrespect me, you treated me like dirt, you ostracized me, you painted me to be a leper and some kind of an enemy of society. And under no circumstances are people going back into those industries. Some people are because they don't have an alternative, but a lot of people have actually turned their back on it, which means there's a further drain on quality teachers, quality classroom assistants, quality nurses, quality doctors, quality police, and so on and so forth. You find that that's also a residual effect or collateral damage from this. People are saying, I'm not going back because of what you did to me.
Yeah, because of what they did, and they didn't respect bodily autonomy. I don't care what your reason is for not wanting to have it. I'm a libertarian. You do what you want with your body as long as you're not hurting anyone else. Now, it's since been proven that the vaccine never prevented transmission. So why were we all forced to have it in the first place? Other people didn't want to get it for religious reasons or because they were trying to conceive and they didn't want to affect their fertility. This is what I've heard from women who are now having troubles. And people who've left the service industries like police, there's one bloke here who is taking them to court, a police officer, and he was such a fine serving police officer. He loved that job. He loved being out in the community and helping. But the way the government treated him, telling him to get not two but three jabs to keep his job, I mean, people have a limit and everyone should be respected. Bodily autonomy, regardless the issue, has to be upheld. If you are going to walk around with a placard saying, my body, my choice, why did that not apply over the last 2.5 years when the government rolled over all of that? I mean, the hypocrisy that we see on this issue, it just blows my mind. So I always stick to the principles of the matter. Government should not be involved in telling us what to do. And they need to respect the people. They have not respected the people for a long time.
They haven't. You know, it doesn't look like there's any signs that they're going to change that anytime soon. I want to sort of move from the policing issue to a matter that's very close, obviously, to your own heart, which is shooters or guns. You're a registered pistol shooter, pistol owner legally. I mean, you don't run around with an AK-47. Doing your own thing illegally. You do it all legitimately and above board. Your family are shooters as well. So obviously, Australia are trying to tighten down on the gun laws. And we've covered this, you know, over the last, year and a half, they're progressively be turning the screws on you guys. What's the state of play now at the minute? Is it showing any signs of abating, or is it just continuing to, the pressure continuing to mount on legitimate Australian gun owners?
The pressure is considering to mount. So what I'm going through now in Western Australia with 92,000 other shooters is 1996. So we're seeing another gun confiscation being rushed out by this government. And it's come along with these insidious text messages from WAPOL, the Western Australia Police, saying that they're running a voluntary buyback scheme. Now, it's not a buyback because the state did not own these guns to begin with. It's confiscation, and they're scaring people by saying you will not be allowed to own these when these laws pass sometime later this year. It's absolutely outrageous how they have treated shooters in this state. We do not have a gun crime problem in Australia generally. We do not have a homicide problem with guns. And now we are seeing it go the other way, like you have in Ireland, with an increase in knife attacks. There was a woman stabbed up north near where I live just yesterday. And we don't have a practical legal right to self-defense in Australia. We do not have castle doctrine. So if someone broke into my house right now, live on air, I would be powerless to stop them, even though I'm a proficient legally owning pistol shooter. They don't care. Their advice in Australia is if you're in trouble, call the police. Now, why would I call the police when they're under-resourced as it is? They will take so long to come out. And I'm sorry, but I am legally required to shoot my pistol more than a police officer is, and they walk around the streets armed. So my faith in authority is not at an all-time high, I must say, but the way this government has treated shooters in WA is appalling, and I do hope come 2025 that there will be a big swing against them, because people are angry and hurt because we are not the ones doing anything wrong, like you said, Rick. We're not running around hurting anyone. We go out to the range. We go out on family hunting trips. It's all very cultural what we do. The government don't care.
Interesting point you made there too, Kate, about hypothetically someone breaks into your apartment, you know, you've got a pistol, you feel like your life could be in danger, you're going to suffer a serious assault. If you were to defend yourself in an act of self-defense, where would that, because obviously in America, some states, you can shoot an intruder dead if you feel that your life's at risk or they're armed, for example. What way would it be, for example, in your scenario, if that worst case were to happen and you protected your own life, shot someone, not even fatally, just shot someone, would you be prosecuted for that where you are at the minute, or what's the law of the land in that one at the minute for you?
In some states, it's a matter of equal force, so you are required to use equal force. Now, that comes into a grey area. If a man punches a woman, is that equal force? When it comes to using firearms, it's illegal. You cannot shoot another human as a civilian, despite the fact that you're a licensed shooter. In America, they have property rights that are respected a lot more than other countries, including Australia, where people cannot trespass on your property. And if they do, you are allowed to shoot them if you give them three warnings, I believe is the standard. So living in a defenseless society, we are a nation of victims here who've been taught and raised to rely on the government and authorities to help us. That terrifies me. I am all about individual empowerment, not just as a woman, for anyone. The only person you should rely on is yourself, your family and friends, of course, not the government, not the state, and definitely not the police.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a sobering thought, that if you were in that position and you had the means to defend yourself from someone, that if you did shoot them, that you could end up being prosecuted or even go to prison for, you know, murder. I don't know what way it could end up, but it's a very sobering thought. And also, I suppose it highlights the importance, something else that you've highlighted on your Twitter feed about self-defense. At least have a little bit of self-defense awareness, maybe try and take some courses, do something, because even a little bit of preparation and a little bit of self-defense knowledge is better than nothing, which unfortunately is what most people have, Kate. Most people will freeze if they're put into a conflict situation, they'll panic, they'll go to pieces, whereas in reality they need to be calm, you know, go for certain parts of the body and all that and put as much distance between you and the attacker as possible. That's not something that's advocated by local governments either, is it? Self-defense, it's rely on the state. The police will take care of you.
Yeah, and it's terrifying. I mean, you see all these incidents occurring and people are defenseless, and the criminals know that. They know that there is a culture in Australia of we rely on the state. They know there are not enough police officers. So they're picking off us as victims because we are a nation of victims. This is not how it's meant to be. The people are meant to have the power to protect themselves and their family and their property. That's not even a thing in Australia. It's terrible to see the way that my country is going. It's very upsetting.
Yeah, it's very sobering indeed. There's another, well, I suppose this isn't a good news story, but there's a post came out yesterday. Sky News Australia covered this. Voters have sent a message to the Queensland government, with Labor suffering massive double-digit swings in two by-elections on Saturday. There was two referendums that were put to the Irish people last Friday, not Friday, but the Friday before, and the government threw millions and millions at it through NGOs to support a yes, yes vote. So they wanted to remove the word mother from the Irish Constitution, and they wanted to remove the word family and replace it with the term durable relationship. Okay, and they were adamant that the Irish people would go along with this. All three main political parties were pushing for this yes, yes vote. NGOs were backing this, the mainstream media were backing this, but when it went to the polls, amazingly, and this is something that'll warm your heart, 80% roughly of the Irish people voted no, no, and the entire island of Ireland rejected this, apart from one little enclave of Dublin called Dunleary. Apart from that, it was a unanimous no. So the government really got their noses bloodied at the polls, probably for the first time in a long time, which I think is an indication of what people's sentiment is. I know you've got your finger very much on the political pulse at the minute in Australia. And although we're talking about dire things in Australia and dire legacies that have been, you know, set upon the people because of the last administrations, these so-called lockdown premiers and the like of ScoMo, Scott Morrison, replaced by Albanese. He's not exactly, inspiring confidence in the Australian people. Could we see some kind of major seed change or shift change in people's, preferences come the next election, or people just died in the wool? Are they going to just keep voting for the same thing that's brought them no prosperity and happiness at all?
I think people have started to suffer. And it's when it affects the individual, that's when people start to take notice of who's making the decisions and asking questions. Why am I in this position? I've paid my taxes. I'm an upstanding citizen. I have a beautiful family. I've worked hard for my house. But that great Australian dream, it's just become so unachievable, especially for my generation and the next generation. So that's why you're seeing this sentiment on the ground in Australia that people are just not happy. And that's when I come in and say it's because of government decisions. That's where you need to be careful and think about where your vote goes. Now, I have my criticisms of the system, but that's what we've got at the moment. So I hope one day we'll become a republic and then maybe I can be a president then, Rick. But
you will.
The system isn't working for the people, but you need to get people in there, not these career politicians like Albo, not these people that have never run a business before in their lives, these people that have just worked as staffers. They are not the people who should be making the decisions because they just don't have the experience, they don't have the compassion, and they don't have the empathy. They just want to go in there and look after their corporate mates, look after their union thugs, look after the biggest donors, and then that's when the people suffer. So long story short, we are suffering and people are looking very carefully about who to vote for next. So let's hope the Liberal Party get their act together, because it is a two-party system here, like America. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But we don't have anyone on the opposite team that inspires much confidence at the moment. So time will tell.
Time will tell. That's one of my favorite little mantras here on Locked and Loaded, because, you know, we can speculate about everything until we're blue in the face, but ultimately, time does reveal all. It reveals people's natures, it reveals people's motives, and it reveals the outcomes of the things that we actually speculate on. So very, very wise words from you. We're pretty much coming up to the end of the show. Just a little bit of time to promote you, I suppose, or give what you're doing a little bit of a plug. So I should have done this at the start of the show. I'm starting to get very unprofessional. I'm introducing guests after they've been on for 15 minutes, or in your case, at the end of a 40-minute slot. I should have really done this back at the start. But Kate, if you're not familiar with her, is also known as Lady Liberty, and you can follow her on extra Twitter at Lady Liberty AUS. Now, you did have a website up there. I'm looking for the link for it on your Twitter page, but it's not there. Is it still Lady Liberty AUS.com, or is that website still up and running?
Yes, ladyliberty.com.au. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, and I also have my own little show called Shooting the Bees, which I'm going to have you on, Rick, where I have a long-form interview with interesting and inspiring people that I've met throughout my time in the Liberty movement. So that's on Spotify and my YouTube channel.
Yeah, so please do check that one out. If you do use Spotify, Shooting the Breeze, you can search for that. And also on YouTube, you have the YouTube channel. Is it just under the same name, Shooting the Breeze? That's where people will find it?
Yes, correct.
Brilliant. Well, listen, we're almost up to time here. It is St. Paddy's Day. Are you heading out anywhere? Are you going to have a hot cocoa and put your head down and get some sleep?
I went out on the weekend for St. Paddy's Day. Rick is the half Irish in me. I had to get out there and have some drinks with some nice British comedians who I've met here in Perth. I'm also leaving WA. I've made the decision to leave. So I'm hitting the road. I'm going traveling. I'm going to take the flight up to Queensland and then across to the States. And then who knows where I'll end up later this year. But I'll always be in the trenches fighting for the people.
Brilliant. I know you will. And all the best for your next move. I know you're leaving WA after a long time and you've done an awful lot to try and fight against the corruption in WA. And I believe you're heading up to Queensland. Me, I'm an Irishman. I didn't even realize yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. When I finish the shift here today, I'll probably have a coffee. I'm going to go in. There's a little place that I live that is close to the coast. And when I'm standing on it, I can see Scotland. It's only 16 miles across the water. And a little lady messaged me. She's probably listening now. She said, I heard you. I'm in Scotland looking over at Ireland. So we're actually kind of looking at each other over at the Irish Sea. But yes, it's all good here. It's a big, big old world out there, but it's a small one too when you know people and you're connected with them. So Kate, thank you so very, very much for taking the time out again today. And yes, I hopefully will be appearing on that podcast. If you're sooner rather than later, the ball's in your court. It's up to you to follow that one up. We'll get something sorted sooner rather than later. So Kate, have an absolutely epic night. And thank you again and again and again. And please come back for more tomorrow. I'll be back on again at 10 a.m. UK time until 12 with Locked and Loaded. Stay tuned for James Freeman and more magic throughout the day on TNT. Today's News Talk.